I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. In his annual State of the State address last night, Kansas Governor Sam Brownback advocated a tax cut for 1.6 million Kansans. He also proposed changes to the way Kansas public schools are funded and called for the legislature to fix the state employee pension plan. Today we'll talk with a reporter and a Kansas lawmaker about the governor's address and outline what the legislature might accomplish this term. In the second portion of today's program, two local school superintendents discuss how a possible reformulation of the education funding formula could affect their districts. Later this hour, Brian McTavish returns with our weekend to-do list. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Kansas Governor Sam Brownback said last night in his State of the State address that he wants to turn Kansas into an incubator for innovation and entrepreneurial success. The way to do that, he said, is to make big changes to the state tax code. Brownback would simplify the law and reduce the number of individual income tax brackets from 3 to 2. He would give the state the second lowest top tax rate in the region. He also would eliminate itemized deductions and exemptions, including the mortgage interest payments, and that big 1% bump in the state sales tax enacted a couple of years ago, that would stay. Also included in the governor's plan are big changes to the state's Medicaid program and the state's school funding program. In short, the road ahead would affect almost every Kansan. With us today to talk about all the proposals are State Representative Pat Colleton. She's a Leawood Republican. And State Representative, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thank you.
Stephen Caranda is also with us. He's the State House Bureau Chief for Kansas Public Radio. Stephen, always good to have you, too. Good morning.
It's a pleasure to be back.
Representative Colleton, the governor wants to tackle some mighty big issues this next year that only begin with the tax code and school finance. Is all this too much for the legislature to tackle in a single session?
Well, I do think it is quite an extensive plan that the governor has unveiled. I think there is a need for a new approach in each of the areas that he has identified as critical to the overall economy of Kansas. So I think the legislature is receptive to change in each of the areas, but I agree with you, the devil is in the details on specific plans, and for example, changing the tax code, whether you're changing charitable contribution or mortgage deductions or whatever else, deserves and will get a lot of discussion. And I don't know if there's time to do a thorough job on all the areas that are under consideration, the school finance, the tax code, Medicaid, and the school finance.
So Pat, you're saying you could envision a session in which a couple of those big items, maybe school finance and the tax code, don't get done this session, maybe carry over until next year?
I think that's right. However, I would say that the number one issue that the governor thinks is immediate, I mean, all of them are immediate in a sense, but the number one is school finance, because we have the looming court orders on the lawsuit that has been brought against the state of Kansas regarding the funding of schools. And the governor's point is we absolutely need to act this session on reform of school finance, whatever form it might take, in order to avoid the courts controlling our schools as opposed to our elected representatives in the legislature.
Stephen Caranda,
so school finance should be addressed this year, and I do think that's a top priority.
Hmm. Stephen Caranda, just overall, how was the speech received last night in the chamber of the House of Representatives?
Well, it was very well received, and part of that is because we've got big Republican majorities in both chambers, and especially more conservative Republican majorities, especially in the House over a few years ago. So there were a lot of people who were glad to hear the tax-cutting proposals. They had already heard the education proposals in the past. So in some respects, Brownback was preaching to the choir.
Pat Colleton, this is the governor's big session, right? Year two for a new governor typically is when sort of the rubber hits the road and you expect a governor to churn through and present maybe the bulk of what he was all about when he got elected to begin with, right?
I think that's right. He did have a roadmap. It mentioned Medicaid. It mentioned school finance. It mentioned the tax code. And I think he is following through on that, so that I don't think it's a surprise that these areas are receiving proposed changes.
You know, Stephen, there was talk the last few months that the governor's tax plan that he unveiled last night would result in higher sales taxes across the state. But that's not happening here under the Brownback proposal. Did that surprise you and maybe the other members of the press corps?
Well, in a way, it is higher sales taxes,
okay,
because right now we have what was supposed to be a 3-year 1% sales tax increase. And next year, in the middle of 2013, most of that was supposed to go away. 0.4% would stay to pay for road construction, but most of that was supposed to go away. This would make that permanent as a way to help pay for some of the other reductions, especially the income tax reduction. So that was a surprise to me, because I remember how hard a lot of Republican representatives fought this 1% sales tax increase a couple years ago when it was originally passed.
But Pat Carlton, the trade-off, as I always understood it, was the governor wanted to reduce the income tax rate and in exchange for that, increase sales taxes across the state to make up for some of that. That was sort of the bargain that was being struck here. Were you surprised there wasn't even more of an emphasis placed on the sales tax going forward?
I was a bit surprised, but over the last week or two, it's become clear that we have another source of income, and that is really oil production in Kansas. It is expected, and there's the major companies that would do this have had talks with the administration that they are expecting to do new wells, mostly based on the idea of the very deep-seated fracking procedures, and that we're expecting to see maybe $100 million a year of new revenue that really hadn't been in plans maybe 6 months ago or 3 months ago. We're expecting to see significant revenue for the state from that, and one of the pieces of the new tax plan is to eliminate the tax exemption that new drilled pools get in Kansas. Right now, they don't pay taxes for the first 2 years, but we're going to tax them right at the get-go, because we think that with the new drilling procedures, there's going to be a lot of drilling in Kansas. It's going to generate a lot of income, and I think that set off against having to do an increase in sales tax. However, I'm among those who voted for the 1 cent sales tax with a promise that I would support the reduction back of most of it, except for the part for transportation, but the reduction back to the old sales tax numbers after the 3 years were out. Remember, we were at a low in 2009 in the economy. We needed money for schools, money for the intermodal, for example, in the Olathe area. We needed money for several different things, and I was among those who was willing to do a temporary sales tax. And so most of us who voted for that really committed to seeing that end next year. So there will be I think that's part of the overall tax revenue plan that is still going to be very much debated, because many of us, like myself, pretty much committed not to seeing that continue. But the two new sources of income that are on the docket are the oil drilling severance tax increase,
right,
or elimination of an exemption, and the gambling money. Now, the Brownback budget calls this year for a 7.5%, $400 million ending balance. If you were to take and not have the sales tax continue, but just go back to the way we had planned on it happening after next year, some of that money would disappear, about $180 million of it. We still would have significant increase in funds in Kansas for revenue.
Pat Carlton, I want to ask you how you're going to approach that issue as a lawmaker, this whole idea of, do you stick with your promise to eliminate that increase in the sales tax, or can you go along with extending it even longer in exchange for reductions in the income tax rate? But first, let me get our listeners involved here from both sides of the state line. You know, in both states, there's all kinds of talk of completely eliminating the income tax as the right way to go to attract businesses down the road. Is that the right way to go? Do you favor that idea? And would it turn, do you buy the idea that it would turn both states into these magnets for new businesses. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, UpToDate@KCUR.org, or you can go to KCUR's Facebook page and write us there. So, Representative Colleton, what are you going to do? Is there a trade-off here that you can live with, or are you going to stand by the promise you made to your constituents a couple of years ago and say, the increase in the sales tax has got to go?
Well, one of the reasons I made that commitment was because the Leawood Chamber of Commerce, and I represent Leawood, and the Overland Park Chamber of Commerce indicated they wanted to see that go away after the three-year period when we thought the economy would be coming back and, in fact, is coming back in Kansas. So when I presented an overview to the chamber just last week, my annual overview before we go back into session, I encouraged them to give me their input on how they feel about continuing the sales tax. But as it stands right now, I made a commitment that I certainly wouldn't change. I did it on the advice of the business community in my area. Mm-hmm. I certainly will listen to the advice, but right now I feel I have a standing commitment on it, and I think other legislators do as well. However, one of the major things that I don't think has come out yet, Steve, that's very positive on the Brownback tax plan is that he will not be taxing the small businesses in the forms of LLCs,
right,
or partnerships or sole proprietorships. He doesn't change the tax rate at all for the large corporations, but he does do away with state income tax on the small business, which are the real jobs generators.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a very positive development for our business in Kansas and certainly something that will be very well received. Right.
Stephen Caranda from Kansas Public Radio, as part of this tax package that Brownback trotted out last night, he's talking about eliminating some very big and popular deductions. I'm thinking about deductions for the mortgage interest payments that folks make on their homes and for charitable deductions as well. How is that idea received by lawmakers and particularly Democrats, Stephen?
Well, that is interesting. Today, some of the governor's staffers are out pitching this plan. I was just in a Ways and Means and an Appropriations Committee meeting where they were pitching these plans, and they were saying that from their perspective, the idea is, well, you may be reducing some of these deductions and some of these credits and exemptions, but you're getting more people money in other ways. You're giving them their income taxes lower, so you're paying them back in other ways. And they're also claiming that with economic growth, that will also benefit people generally with better jobs and things like that. One of the big ones that's been attracting a lot of attention is this plan would eliminate the earned income tax credit, which is a tax credit that benefits low-income people.
Right.
And, you know, some Democrats are coming out and saying, look, that's basically right there a shift. You're taking away this credit that benefits low-income people, and you're cutting back the income tax predominantly for higher-income people. That's not fair. The governor's staff's response to that is, well, we're going to take that money from the earned income tax credit and invest it in Medicaid and invest it in other programs that benefit low-income people. We're going to have to see how these details shake out. But right now, the tax plan is definitely catching some criticism from Democrats.
You know, Pat or Steve, I'm not sure who to address this to, but how about my situation? You know, I'm a father of two, married. You know, I can't tell from what I'm looking at here if my overall state tax obligation is going to go up or go down as a result of what the governor's talking about here. I'll lose my mortgage interest deduction. I'll lose charitable deductions, but I'll pick up something in income tax, that going down a little bit. Do you have any sense of how it's going to play out for a typical family of four, Pat Colleton?
Actually, I am not sure at this time because I think you've heard this discussion at the federal level as well. When you get rid of deductions and lower the income tax, while you certainly create more income for the person by paying less income tax,
right,
reducing the reductions, the deductions may take that some of that away. So I have not seen printouts on families of four of how that might go. However, I do know this from the meeting that we were just in, that Steve Caranda and I were just in, being presented at the State House. The average deduction for a mortgage in Kansas is about $350. The average deduction for a family for a charitable is about $250.
Mm-hmm.
So they're losing that amount of deduction as an average now, and gaining 1.5% off their income tax. So depending how large your income tax is and whether you're
right.
standard or not and those kinds of deductions, you might come out fine or you might not. One thing, and I do think it's a huge issue on this earned income tax, but one thing they are doing to offset that is they are doubling the deduction. They're actually increasing the deduction from $4,500 to $9,000 for single mom heads of households. So they are actually going to somewhat offset that, but it isn't a one-to-one offset by any means. There is a loss there in the for low-income Kansans. They hope then, they promise that they will put none of the savings there back into lowering income tax, but will use it entirely to increase, and they're estimating by $60 million, the amount of Medicaid money available for low-income Kansans. So they recognize that will not be popular unless there actually is a shift that supports the low-income Kansans.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about the Kansas legislative session. Governor Sam Brownback just unveiled his second State of the State address last night in the House chamber in Topeka. The question on the table is it time to completely eliminate the income tax in both Missouri and Kansas? It's being talked about in both states. Our phone number here again, 816-235-2888. Our email address is updatedate@kcur.org. Stephen Kranda, is the Governor Brownback's ultimate goal here to completely wipe out the income tax?
You know, I've specifically asked him about that in the past. He has, he always, and his staffers always talk very positively about states that have eliminated the income tax
yes.
completely. And even just today when they were talking about his proposal, that doesn't eliminate the income tax completely. His staff members were still talking up the states that have eliminated the income tax. So I think that there may be a long-term goal to continually reduce it. And Brownback made that clear in his State of the State last night. One of the things he's proposing is that lawmakers cap budget growth at 2% per year.
Just going to ask you about it.
And then beyond that, all the additional money, he would like to see that go to other tax decreases. And I think a big one of those would be continuing to lower the income tax. So they haven't come out and said, well, this is as far as we want to go. So I think if this plan is successful in coming years, depending on how our state finances are, we could see additional proposals to continue lowering the income tax.
Representative Colleton, this idea of capping the growth in state government to 2% a year is very popular for conservatives, a little more suspect to liberals, Democrats, and more moderate lawmakers. The idea sounds good, but State Senator John Vrattel was in the paper today saying, you know, hey, state government needs to grow a lot faster than 2% a year to provide all the services that it now provides. What do you make of this 2% cap that the governor's talking about here?
I think many of us, and really the business community across greater Kansas City, have been opposed to any what they call Tabor-like cap on spending, where you then take any amount above that and divert it. And I agree that the 2% is problematic. Most of us believe that there will be serious inflation in the future. And if you have a 2% cap, you could really skew the amount that was available for schools or
right.
for social services for the mentally ill or the disabled. So most of us, I think, responding to who are big supporters of the business community in greater Kansas City are very suspect in any sort of a cap.
Hmm. Let's go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Jay from Kansas City, Kansas. Jay, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you.
Well, basically, just a question and a comment. I was wondering, you know, it's okay for obviously Brownback to take away the earned income credit from lower income families and reinvest it in Medicare. I can appreciate that. But what the problem is why don't they look at other ways of doing that with businesses? And I'm not saying they should tax businesses more, but you know, why reinvest the lower income people's money as opposed to people who have more of an income? Why don't you invest, take a little bit more there and invest it as well? I mean, you see what I'm saying? I mean, it doesn't depend on where the money comes from. It just seems like, you know, I mean, we've seen government invest our money, and it just hasn't been positive.
Representative Colleton?
Well, I would say what the statistics show is that we've had a huge increase in the amount of growth of government revenue, and we've continued to tax and increase taxes along the board here. And I think what the thought is that if you could lower the tax, particularly for small business, you can generate more jobs and more revenue that way that would be more positive for the low-income families. In other words, the idea isn't to get rid of the revenue that the state has, but to generate it through private economic business activity rather than simply raising taxes and taxing. And so what the governor very much wanted us to do is to become one of the lower small business taxing states in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And we are now going to be just below Colorado as the second lowest tax for small business in all the states in our region. And we think that will generate business and will be very positive for growth of state revenue that's sustainable because it isn't just based on taxing business and others more and more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the general philosophy.
You know, Stephen Crane, it's interesting to me that there's still talk about capping the growth in state government because can't you make a pretty solid case that Kansas, the size of Kansas government and really the size of state governments all across the country have been so dramatically cut back in recent years because of the recession? A lot of folks would say, boy, we've cut it a lot already. Why do we have to cut it some more?
That's exactly the point that was made by a couple people I talked tonight. I spoke with Representative Laura, or rather I should say Senator Laura Kelly, who's the top Democrat on the Senate Ways and Means Committee, and she said, you know, this really ties lawmakers' hands. There are times when funding needs to go up for programs. And the top Democrat in the Kansas House, Paul Davis, said a really similar thing to the point you were making. We've cut in recent years because of, you know, basically the state had to cut because of falling revenues, and now we're kind of in this valley. And if you cap the ability for the state to climb out of the valley, a lot of people would say, well, you're doing long-term damage to our education system. If you cap the amount the state can spend on education or on any other programs, you're sort of freezing us at this level that we're at now, which is a level that a lot of state services have been way cut back.
Right.
Education funding has been way cut back. So a lot of people look at that as saying, you know, you're taking away our tools to advance from where we are now.
Stephen Caranda, Democrats pretty much in unison saying the governor's on the wrong track here?
Yes, definitely, I would say. It will be interesting to see how this develops, though, because there are some ideas that they're sort of on the same page about. The governor has talked about wanting a big ending balance, I believe more than around $450
million. $465 million is the note I took.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At the end of next fiscal year, which is a large amount. And the Democrats say, hey, you know, we're all for saving as well. We would like to start a rainy day fund. And their argument is, look, if we put some of that money in a rainy day fund, there are restrictions on how it can be used so that we don't use it until we really need it. And their concern is if we just have this huge ending balance sort of on a whim, if a majority of legislators are willing to vote for it, they can spend that on something. They can spend a big chunk of it on something. And then when there's a real challenge down the road, maybe the money won't be there. So they're not against some of the ideas behind all of the governor's plan, but they're definitely skeptical of the tax plan right now.
We have an email from Tom at UpToDate@KCUR.org, and Tom writes, I'm on a fixed income. The governor's proposal is similar in some respects to Herman Cain's 999 plan. That plan was shown to be detrimental to those on a fixed income. As I see it, the same would be true for the governor's plan. Pat Colleton, that makes sense?
Well, I'm not sure because it depends on that. If that person has a lot of deductions currently, maybe that would be true. But otherwise, depending on what the income is, they're going to see a rate. If they're under $15,000 a year, they're going to see a reduction in their income from 3.5% to 3% reduction in their income tax from 3.5% to 3% if you're under an income of $15,000 a year. So even if you're low income, you're going to see a reduction. If you're above $15,000 a year in income, you're going to see a reduction of 24% of your state income tax. So those are significant numbers, and the only people that are higher income and have higher deductions are the ones that are a possibility, depending on their profile of deductions and exemptions, that they could come up with a higher tax burden.
Let me just talk about schools for a few minutes, because in just a little bit here in our second half, we'll be talking to a couple of school superintendents about Governor Brownback's plan for funding public schools. But in general, he's talking about simplifying the funding formula, not cutting funding for any one district, and giving taxpayers the ability to raise taxes on themselves to give their districts more money. Stephen Kranda, how is that plan being received in the legislature right now?
Some people are skeptical of it because, as we were talking a moment ago, schools are really in a place where they've been cut back a lot. And the governor's plan, while it does include an additional $45 million for some of the poorest school districts, that doesn't go that far towards reversing a lot of the cuts we've seen in recent years. So some people look at this and say, well, it's great that we give local governments more authority, but the fact of the matter is that we're not reversing a lot of the cuts we've made. So some people are concerned that what this would do is you wouldn't increase school funding very much, and you'd give local governments the ability to raise their property taxes, and you're going to see some local governments that just say, well, we don't want to continue where we are right now, so we're just going to up the taxes. Some people have that concern.
Pat Carlton, you're from Leawood. I'm wondering what you expect among Johnson County school districts. Do you expect supporters of those districts to go out and try to raise taxes if this whole plan passes and increase their property taxes to fund schools that have been cut back so much in recent years? Or what's your expectation going forward if this thing passes?
My expectation is that we will not, the school districts will not try to raise property taxes in the next several years, because part of the governor's plan is we're right now at $3,780 per child,
yes,
and he's going to put us up within the next year at $4,490 per child, and that increase will certainly be extremely helpful, and so we're going to see a situation right now, I think, with Shawnee Mission and Blue Valley, and certainly Olathe as well, where you wouldn't expect any of the school districts to take advantage of the piece of his plan that would allow them at some time in the future to go forward. But I agree with Stephen Kranda that there has to be more assurance that in the out years we're going to see increases in funding for education. Right now, people are not dissatisfied with the amount of funding in the next year or two. Everybody's held harmless. Mm-hmm. Numbers, about 20% of the schools get more money. You know, the next couple of years are fine, and we go from that $3,700 to $4,400 per student. But everybody's so unsure and fearful about year three and four that I think as this discussion goes forward, the hope of passing it relies on some assurance in the little bit further out years. And I'm not sure how best that could be fashioned, but I think that needs to be there for the school districts to be comfortable with this idea.
Steve,
I actually have sorry to interrupt you, but I actually have one point to add to that. Part of the reason that the governor is able to increase the base state aid per student, as Representative Colleton said, is because they're getting rid of all the weightings. In the past, you get X amount, $3,700 per student. And then on top of that, you could get more if you had more students with lower income or more students with special needs. That's all going out the window. So now you would just get X amount per student.
Stephen, just briefly to wrap up this conversation, there's all this talk. You also, the lawmakers have to also redistrict this session, redraw the boundary lines for House and Senate and the four members of Congress. There was all this talk that Wyandotte County would be drawn into the big first district, which covers all of western Kansas. Is that really going to happen, Stephen? Because many leaders in Wyandotte County are pretty hot about that idea.
Well, we don't know at this point, and that's because there have been no official maps revealed. Just this week, the House members of the redistricting committee met and approved their rules for the process, and the speaker sort of set a timetable, and he wants the first official maps to be revealed later this month. So right now there's speculation about that, but we haven't officially seen it yet.
Okay. Well, I want to thank State Representative Pat Colleton. She's from Leawood, and Stephen Kranda, the State House Bureau Chief for Kansas Public Radio. Thanks for the updates and all the good information, guys. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve, very much.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, coming up after a short break here, we'll talk with two school superintendents, Dr. Tom Trigg from Blue Valley and Dr. Cynthia Lane from the Kansas City, Kansas School District about what Governor Brownback's school funding formula would mean for them. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation with a former health insurance executive about why health insurers make promises they have no intention of keeping, you'll find it in all of our older broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, a memoir of marriage, Asperger's syndrome, and one man's quest to be a better husband. Also, commentator Victor Wishna returns with the fans' notes on how we're all feeling so romantic about Romeo. I think he means the Chiefs' new head coach. Well, it's no secret that Kansas Governor Sam Brownback wants to reformulate the state school formula. Under his proposal, taxpayers in school districts would have the right to raise property taxes to higher levels to fund their schools. Brownback would also vastly simplify what is a very complicated formula. Here to give us their takes on this new plan are Dr. Tom Trigg. He's superintendent of the Blue Valley School District. And Tom, it's always good to have you. Thanks for taking some time.
Hey, Steve. Thanks. It's great to visit with you.
And also with us is Dr. Cynthia Lane, superintendent of the Kansas City, Kansas School District as well. Cynthia, again, we sure appreciate the time.
Always glad to be here.
Cynthia, how would Governor Brownback's plan affect your Kansas City, Kansas District in terms of how much money it would get from the state?
Well, much of the detail is still unclear, Steve, but what we are concerned about is that every child in Kansas deserves access to a high-quality education. And it appears on the surface that, moving forward, that funding may not be adequate so that we can all provide quality teachers and quality experiences wherever you live in Kansas.
Well, explain that to me, Cynthia, because we just talked to Representative Pat Colleton, who was talking about the fact that funding would go from roughly $3,800 a child to $4,500 a child. That's a fairly significant increase. Why wouldn't that be enough for KCK to tide you over for a few years?
Well, keeping in mind that our current funding level is significantly below what we have determined, the legislators have determined it costs to educate a child, it appears in the funding formula that we will be held harmless at least for the initial year, but we're at the 1996 levels of funding. Mm-hmm. And it also appears as though that additional money will benefit 25% of the children in the state and leave 75% of the children without additional resources.
And what do you mean by that? It would help 25, but not the other 75.
Well, because it eliminates the additional support received for districts who have students with lots of high needs, and it spreads that money around to districts that are smaller but may not have those needs. So it appears to be beneficial for smaller districts, but it's not beneficial for any of us in this region. And certainly not for 75% of the children we're educating.
Gotcha. Let's go across the state line down to the Blue Valley School District and Tom Trigg, a very different district in terms of demographics. Tom, are you happy with the governor's new plan or not so much?
Well, overall, we're happy. We think that it's a good starting point, quite frankly. I think Dr. Lane makes a really good point, and I believe that all superintendents in the state of Kansas want a formula that's going to provide an outstanding education for every child in the state. And I think this is a step in that direction, but I think it needs some work. And I think that we do need to work with the legislature so that we can add some things to the formula that will address the at-needs population, the at-risk populations that places like Kansas, Kansas and Wichita and Topeka, tend to deal with. So, you know, the local control component is very, very positive for us. It's something that we've been seeking after for a number of years.
That's the ability of local taxpayers to raise their own taxes to help fund districts like yours or anywhere else's, right?
That's exactly right. And, we've been capped for so many years in terms of our local control component. Our patrons tell us over and over that rather than facing cuts when revenues are short at the state level, they would really rather have the opportunity to determine whether or not they would like to raise local taxes to make up for that deficit. And currently, we just don't have that. So the new plan does address that. That's a positive for us. But it's still, you know, it still needs some work.
So, Tom, even you coming from a more affluent district in southern Johnson County and western Johnson County, you think that there needs to be even some adjustments made for poorer students like so many that are in Dr. Lane's district?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, when you're an educator, you're an educator for all kids. And as Kansans, as Kansas superintendents, as Kansas boards of education, we all need to come together and we need to recognize that we've got vast diversity across the state in terms of the needs of kids, and it really does cost a different amount of money to educate kids that have different sets of needs. And so we've never, ever fought against something that would benefit another district, and so we'd be very supportive of additional dollars going there. At the same time, we really would fight strongly to maintain that part of the governor's plan that allows for local control.
Dr. Lane, break this down for us just a little bit more. Why does it cost more to educate students who aren't as well off financially than it does students who are wealthier? It may be obvious on some levels, but walk us through that a little bit.
Well, I'd be glad to, Steve. One of the things to think about is that education occurs not just while a child is at school, but it occurs in all environments. And oftentimes, students who come from backgrounds that are challenged financially, they don't have access to those kinds of things that you and I provide our children. So maybe an easy way to think about it is no two individuals are alike. You might have a person that let's say, weighs 200 pounds and another person who weighs 100 pounds, and you don't feed them the same. Everyone needs different resources in order to learn. And so what we have been able to do with the additional funding that comes in the current funding formula, by the way, we don't think is broken, we've been able to meet the needs of kids and to provide resources for them to close the gap between their experiences and what other children have access to.
Dr. Lane, if your students need this extra funding, why would you suppose the Brownback administration would not recognize that in their proposal here for a new funding formula? Why is there different views of the world here going on?
You know, I'm not sure that we actually have different views, but we have a different means of getting there. The state is responsible to ensure that every child is educated, the children in Tom's district, my district, and throughout Kansas. And one of the things that happens when we move to more local control is that communities of different resources have to figure out how to meet the need. So I'm all for increased local control. With this provision, we must maintain the responsibility to fund education at the state level. And so if there are additional things that Tom's kids need, then there's a way for the state to provide what they call equalization or those funds to Kansas City, Kansas, because our kids need some of those same things. So if we maintain the responsibility at the state level, then every child has access to resources.
Tom Trigg from Blue Valley, as we've talked about this morning, there one component of this new plan is this ability of local taxpayers to increase taxes to fund their local districts to a greater extent than they can now. How quickly would you expect to seek higher taxes to support Blue Valley schools if, in fact, this new law passes the way it's laid out right now?
You know, Steve, I think we'd be very cautious. Our Board of Education has a history of being very, very in tune with our community and with their wants, desires, and needs, and really has tried to set a fiscal policy, a fiscal note that is supported by the community. So as an example of that, a few years ago, we did get some additional local control in the form of a cost of living, and we really only raised our cost of living percent 1% a year for the first 3 years, and then when the economy turned south and the revenues went down in Kansas, we did increase 2% up to the maximum 5% that we're allowed. So I think they've demonstrated that, you know, they're very conservative when it comes to the authority that they're given, and I don't see any reason why that would change. I think We would seek, you know, some increase because we've had the pretty dramatic cuts over $11 million in the last couple of years.
Right.
But I don't think we would, in one fell swoop, try to go back and raise mill levies on our patrons. I think we'd have a dialogue about that. And I just think, you know, our board tends to be very fiscally responsible.
Dr. Lane, in Kansas City, Kansas, how quickly could you imagine asking taxpayers there for an increase to bolster your schools?
Well, our board is very aware of the resources in the community, both from small business and property owners. So they are very thoughtful about making those decisions each year. We've lost over $45 million over the last 4 years in state funding. And so our cuts have gone deep, and the board has had to make some increases. They could not keep pace with significant increases made in other districts. So just as Tom's board would be prudent, ours would be too, but they always make that decision based on how do we ensure that our students continue to move forward and make progress. So, you know, we worry about the impact on small business and property owners, and so those decisions are made prudently, but always keeping in mind what the kids need in order to be successful.
Dr. Lane, you mentioned this $45 million in cuts in Kansas City, Kansas, the last few years. And I think we've talked about this before, but maybe it's bears repeating here. Has Kansas's tradition of good public schools, you know, has that tradition been tarnished a little bit the last few years because of these very big cuts that so many districts have had to face?
You know, our teachers work extraordinarily hard throughout Kansas, and so we've continued to see progress overall. But what's happening now is because of the economic impact the decisions have had on teachers and their families, we are beginning to see more teachers looking elsewhere outside of the state of Kansas in order to support their families. And when you lose high-quality teachers, you lose progress, and our kids lose access to being successful. So even though the teachers have worked extraordinarily hard to prevent a downturn in performance, they're beginning to have to think about their own families, and that is of great concern to every superintendent in Kansas.
Tom Trigg, how about you in Blue Valley?
You know, our salary schedule's been frozen for the last 3 years, So our teachers are absolutely feeling a pinch, just like everyone across the country is feeling. And I agree with Cindy that I am so proud of them for the fact that we're seeing no less effort. In fact, we're seeing more effort, and we're seeing great attitudes, and we're still seeing improvements and strides being made in the academic achievements of our kids. So, you know, we've hired a great bunch of folks, and so far they're just, you know, continuing to work to the best of their abilities, and we're just, you know, proud that they're aligned with us, and you know, we're doing everything we can to keep them because we feel so good about the teaching staff that we have.
Let me get a quick phone call here before we move on to Brian McTavish. Greg from Lawrence, be brief if you would, Greg.
Okay. I'm not a fan of Governor Brownback at all, but I do like the proposal on school finances. Because we're a blue spot in the middle of a very red anti-tax state, and if we can't convince the state to fund education at an adequate level, we need the ability to do that ourselves. Right now, Lawrence is looking at consolidating elementary schools, consolidating some smaller schools, and building a larger elementary school because it's more efficient. But we're forced into that because we can't raise a little bit of money for operating. And so we can pass a bond issue to spend millions on a new school that's a little bit more efficient. Overall, it's spending far more money, but the restrictions on how money can be spent are forcing us into this really bizarre decision.
All right, Greg, thank you for your comment. We're going to leave our conversation there. Dr. Tom Trigg, superintendent of Blue Valley Schools. Always appreciate it, Tom. Thanks so much.
Hey, Steve, thank you. I enjoyed being on.
Thank you. And Dr. Cynthia Lane, superintendent of the Kansas City, Kansas School District. Cynthia, appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Steve.